good opportunity to thank KITK for the whole opportunity to be here, even if I am supposed to be in granular physics. Not talking about things. So, let me first tell you the bottom line, and it's tough on anyone who's in late. So, I want to start by thinking about fermions on an arbitrary graph. So we've got some nodes, let's label that node P, and every node there's a fermion state possible. So here's our Hamiltonian, and the leading term will just be a sum over the nodes, some on-site potential that is offset by chemical potential, because we're not going to be able to control where these comings and goings of these fermions, and just an on-site number operator term. So that's on this node. We've got other nodes. There's some other node Q. These nodes talk to each other through inter-site hopping. So with some amplitude, which is convenient for me to put an explicit factor of I in, I've got some hopping amplitude for these particles to hop from site Q to site P. So we need to add that in. We've got a sum over all connected pairs of nodes. We want to be able to see this. We don't want to admit zero connections into that sum. Hopping element times then the destruction of a fermion at site Q creation at site P. Yes, that's why I say I want to be abstemious. I want to be careful only to include terms there where TPQ is non-zero, for reasons that will become apparent. Of course, you've got to have the Hermitian conjugate there. Now, this is pretty boring unless you let these nodes talk to lots of other nodes, and in particular, there's going to be no restriction on the structure of loops in this graph. So this is just fermion hopping on a completely arbitrary graph. Let's keep the graph connected, or otherwise the problem just splits up. And of course, the key thing in terms of the agenda of getting fermions out of bosons are the awkward anti-commutation relations of these fermion operators, that two fermion operators anti-commute. For granular people, that's CP, CQ, plus CQ, CP equals one. And slightly messily, of course, but the conjugate mix relation between a C and a conjugate C. Now, the big bottom line is I want to show you that we can get the elementary excitations of that Hamiltonian out of a different one, and here it comes. You're getting this one in advance without much prior explanation. We'll have an on-site term, just more convenient now to write it in terms of an explicit number operator because it's going to change how we get it. And then the hopping terms, well, they're going to look just slightly more complicated. The explicit I anticipates losing that factor of I by the time we get to here. And now we've got some operators that turn out to be bos, and they have to be double indexed. BPQ dagger BQP. That's now the analog of that hopping term. And of course, even granular physicists have to keep things submission. And now I have to own up that there will be some loop terms, but it's not going to make much sense for me to write those down yet. And now, but let's just anticipate that they involve some operators which are even more clumsy to index. We have to give them three indices. And now, in all of these, the first index on any operator is the crucial index, and we use that index to associate a given operator with a particular site. Where are we going to go? And for all these operators, we have P not equal to Q, the commutation relation of a simple-minded soul would like, that is, that any of a number operator on site P, one of these B operators on site P, one of these big B operators which have two more indices on site P, will commute, not anti-commute anymore, but commute with any corresponding operator for some other site. So in this limited sense, these new operators are bones. Now, they have interesting commutation relations internal to the site, that is, you know, the commutation relations between n, little b and big p on the same site, but between different sites, it's strictly commutation. There are some interrelations. But that doesn't do any harm. The claim is then that these two Hamiltonians, this one with explicit fermions in, this one without, with purely those like operators, have equivalent elementary excitations.
Have equivalent spectra?
Yes.
So they have the same idea.
Correct.
They're the same operator.
Well, they've not been written down in terms of the same operators, but underneath the implication
is... They have the same idea.
Okay. There's one possible caveat, and that is that the way this is written, we have operators that can change the fermion number by one. Those are not physical operators, but they are there. It's not so clear whether this
reference...
Can I come to that? Whereas here, in this representation, I think we do not have any operators which can change the fermion number by one. You change it by two, but not by one. Sorry?
Unclear
whether non-locally we have them. Possibly we do.
Usual organization, like computer machines that were languages, there are operators non-local.
Right. And the answer is that I'm going to show you different levels of this. At this starting level, I think, in fact, it does exist a non-local operator that can do it. But by the time you start paring the representation down and making it more economic, you throw those away.
But in that, I don't understand
why the equivalent of the big
salvation. It's got the same spectrum.
Yes, but it's possible to have two states, but no operator that takes you between them within the representation.
What I have two states, I can define an operator.
In physics, there is no operator that will take you from a state of zero fermions to one fermion. Can't do it. You cannot create one electron.
You can create
an electron-positron pair. You can move an electron, but you can't create a single electron with any physical matrix.
That's only true if there's a conserved charge.
It's not a bad approximation in physics where I come from.
No, but you have to use that, but that depends on how much. Whatever it is, in the Hilbert space, there exists an operator that connects those two states. If you add state one, state two, you check the operator, which is kept one.
Well, at that level, of course, you can create any operator you like.
Then you can write down an operator and bring it on to the. If you have all the eigenstates, you've got to be able to do that.
Yes, but what's not clear is whether you can write it in terms of just these operators. You might need some other operators.
I asked what the rules of the game are.
Because all I've, we're getting, all I've got to be able to do in Hamiltonian is move particles around and count.
But you are saying that HB has an eigenstate, which has Fermi number one.
Oh, yeah.
That's what the rules of the game are a little bit. I mean, when you define something on an abstract graph, you know, I could, for instance, if I wanted to choose to order my sites in a line and then just apply an old-fashioned Jordan-Minger transformation.
Yeah.
Certainly turn fermions into bosons. I lose the notion of locality since you're connecting all your sites.
So it would be the graph of the d-dimensional.
Yeah. Okay. So just for demands for particular sources, right?
So just to be clear. In principle, the graph is completely arbitrary. It can be what we like, although, in terms of how I'm going to describe it, I'd like you to keep the local coordination number in terms of how many nodes a given node is connected to by hopping to finite.
But it could be the graph of the d-dimensional.
Absolutely, it could be. Absolutely. There is no restriction. On loops, so it could be square lattice, it could be a three-dimensional lattice of some sort, or it could be a lattice that does not embed in any finite dimension, if you really want to. And as a result, you can have essentially an arbitrary fermion spectrum. There are issues of fermion doubling problems, which I'm not going to, the way we're going, I won't reach them, but essentially you can do this for a completely arbitrary fermion spectrum. And the other thing which is important is that interactions can be included. We've got essentially here quite explicitly the number operators and current operators, those go through. So you could, I won't carry them through, but you could add on to the Hamiltonian interaction terms in terms of number operators and current operators, and they would do no damage to the story. And I don't want to get too hung up on this, but of course there is a subtext here, and that is that for any type of fermion, what more could you ask? What more features of the sort of fermion you can get in this way could you desire? So the implication is, in principle, it's possible to get almost any reasonable fermion out of such a mechanism. There's a bit of background that I give partly for due credit. So the first is some work by Kitaev, which gives you a flavour of the sort of models that this is describing. Studied a spin half model on a honeycomb lattice. Some people in the room may even have heard this because the reference is 22 May 2002 KITT talk. Not, so far as I know, separately published. So here's one site on the honeycomb lattice, and on that site you've got, of course, three Pauli spin operators, and then you couple this to a neighbor site on that lattice in a rather particular way. So there's sigma x against sigma y, sigma z, and you've just coupled the sigma x's across that link of the honeycomb lattice. And you play this game along the other links, coupling different spin components along the different types of links. So that sigma y is linearly coupled to this sigma y down here. There's sigma z there, sigma x there. I'm continuing the picture geometrically. Over here, this sigma z is coupled sigma z on this site, sigma y there, sigma x there. this sigma x would be coupled to a honeycomb neighbor over here, this one would be coupled to a honeycomb neighbor over here, this one to a honeycomb neighbor over there, this one, and so on and so forth. And this is the sort of model that this is actually describing. They're not always just simple Pauli spins 1/2, but we have this feature that we've got spin-like quantum degrees of freedom living on the nodes, and different components are coupled between different nodes. And what Kitaev showed was that this type of spin model has fermionic excitations. Now, of course, that's a two-dimensional model, so, of course, that's not particularly surprising. So, we then go on to what, in publication order, it's Levin and, but I think it's much more, I may be doing injustice, but I think it's much more going to go away. We showed, essentially, they reverse engineered what Kitaev had done. So, they showed that either on a square and, importantly, on a cubic three-dimensional lattice, these particular instances, you could go from simple fermion hopping to a spin model. And as I say, that's essentially reverse engineering what Kitaev did. And what am I doing? Well, essentially just generalizing what they did. So that's just to be clear. Two references, FISREV B67245316. And just to make sure that everybody read it, also a partner paper in FISREV D68065003. And now to take this forward, for those not familiar, I just need to take fermions apart a little bit. Some people will be very familiar with this. Just to make the first point, that if I have two fermion creation operators, Ci, Cj, these anti-commute, and so if you apply them in the opposite order, you get the same effect, but with the minus sign. And this is true however far apart are the two states I and J. And we're so, the physicists have brought up in a cradle to write that like that and take the view that it's totally natural. But what it tells you is that single fermion operators interfere with each other at long range, in fact beyond causal connection. And now one can have fights about whether or not you view that as being a violation of locality. Single fermion operators in that sense do appear to violate locality. But just to be clear, of course, pairs are absolutely fine. So for example, the product of two commutes with a product of some other two. Right? And so as long as you put terms in your Hamiltonian which are even power net and fermion operators, all is well, physics is local. I got into trouble for saying that fermions bust locality. It's only single fermion operators that bust locality, and this is where I come back to the issue of, is a single fermion creation operator a physical thing? It's certainly mathematically defined.
That's not even observable.
It's better not. No, you get into terrible trouble if you try to put odd powers of fermion operators into Troy Hamiltonian. So anyone who's tried to do it knows. So that's the first thing that's motivating, by the way, this is coming from. The second thing is that if you want to be minimalist about fermions, then it's simpler to work in terms of Majorana fields or operators. I'm trying not, yes, they are called Majorana fermions, but I'm, you know, Fermi's got his name on a standard fermion. I get into terminological trouble, so I really just call these Majoranas. What are these about? Well, if you take a bona fide fermion, in this sense, you can always decompose that into a pair of Majoranas. So I have a first Majorana, second one. I've only got one label there, so I've got to invent a second label for this one. There are some arbitrary choices of phase, but I want to do the simple thing and choose all these Majorana operators to be Hermitian. And once you've done that, they have a nice simple set of commutation relations, or rather anti-commutation relations. So any Majorana has the same anti-commutation with any other. So this is just it's a bit simpler than messing about with standard fermion operators, and it split things up into more elementary things. The other nice thing for later use is the number operator. If you offset it by 1 after multiplying by 2, so it has values plus or minus 1, that is writable from those two as product of those two Majorana operators. And it's worth noting that you may have started with some fermions, you've split them up into Majoranas. If you care to, you can repair those Majoranas any way you like to get back a new set of standard fermions. There's nothing special about the pair that came from breaking up the same original fermion.
Just to be pedantic on the notation, the prime, you mean the prime on P or prime on M?
Well, P prime
in the
sense
it's the same site, right?
Yeah, but I've got a different index.
Because the prime is really should be on M. It's a different set of Majorana from the M.
Well, all right. How about compromising on that? Well, N is the number of sites. Well, P plus N, I'll just use. Well, I can't call this P plus 1 because I've got some other site P plus 1.
What's wrong with the M prime sub P?
All right, okay. Just going to cause me. Right, I'm a bit worried that will cause me trouble later. Okay. So now I've given you all the machinery and I can show you the trick that delivers what's on the left-hand board. So the first step is rather retrograde, and that's that we slightly generalize the hopping terms, writing those as our hopping amplitude CPQ, and then we've got CP dagger CQ, and we arbitrarily and gratuitously put an extra sign factor in there, and these extra signs, they're restricted to be plus or minus 1. And now, as long as we behave ourselves, that's just a trivial gauge transformation. Provided we keep the product SPQ, SQR, S some last member P equal to 1 round all round all loops. Now, of course, it suffices to do that round some elementary complete set of loops, but if we keep that set of those products equal to 1 round all loops, and loops are strictly defined in terms of what's connected through hopping, once again, the reason why I did not want spurious connections.
But this may be a very strong limitation, right? We get
to
all loops.
Well, it suffices. It suffices to apply it to an elementary set of local loops.
Well, you take that for all loops. Otherwise, you turn fermions into bosons.
Yes, but the product of two local loops is one bigger loop.
No, it's obviously possible in square lattices. Yeah.
But by trivial Gauss equation, you mean changing the sign on one of the C's?
Yes, that's right. But I'm not going to bother to construct it all. Just asking you to note that there's a subset of cases of this which do no damage. Now we do something more worrying, and that's that we elevate these little S's into quantum mechanical operators, keep their eigenvalues at plus or minus one, and now write our Hamiltonian. So I've got the on-site terms, nothing's happened to those, and now the hopping terms, we've got everything we had before, but now CP dagger, and let's put the SPQ in there, CQ plus the conjugate, and we've got to police this. So what we do is apply a penalty. You can make the penalty different for different loops, but it doesn't really add very much. And now a sum over an complete elementary set of loops of 1 minus the product around each loop of the corresponding S operators. So what this is designed to do, of course, is just pick out that you're seeing an improper gauge transformation and bump up the energy.
You don't want a square on that parenthesis. You bump up and bump down the energy.
No.
Oh, you mean it's not satisfied.
One is zero.
One is zero. Yes. Okay.
I cooked it to do nothing when the wave transformation is proper. So what's happening in terms of energy here now is that we've got some set of eigenstates that correspond to the eigenstates of the original Hamiltonian, and then raised by an amount of order g, we've got kicking in states which have got one change of local frustration state, and then higher up by of order 2g, there are states with of order 2 changes of frustration state compared to the original Hamiltonian. And now I've got to be a little bit more accurate and admit that it's only in this window that the new Hamiltonian HS and H naught agree as the spectrum. On the other hand, G is under my control. I can push that up as high as I like, so I can push this trouble as far away as I like. But make no mistake, we've achieved this at a big cost. We've made the Hilbert space enormously bigger by doing it. Bigger by a factor of 2 per link. Okay, so now the next step is simply to use these properties to quite arbitrarily but legitimately write each SPQ as a product of 2 new Majoranas. Nothing to do with the fermions we've already got, but a new pair, and it's convenient to index those MPQ and MQP. Right, so these new Majoranas carry 2 indices that identifies them to a particular link. And now what you can do is you can take this, put it in there, and reorganize that product. So that product, if you reorganize it, becomes CP dagger as an MPQ, and then MQP XCQ.
And we can, what MPQ is defined how?
These are just new Majorana operators that I've introduced. I've introduced two of them for each link. And this product, IM times another M, generically has eigenvalue plus or minus 1. So it's a perfectly good representation of the S's. But it's a representation that comes at a price, because now these are bona fide Majoranas, they will anti-commute with our original Fermion operators. And indeed, we desperately want them to do so for the purpose of the trick. Let me just connect with what was on the left.
The M's are Hermitian.
The M's are Hermitian. That's a phase choice you can make in Majorana. I've made the Hermitian choice. This is the B PQ dagger, and this is the QP. So we've identified some of the operators now in this Hamiltonian. And what's quite crucial is that we're grouping things according to the index, which by convention I'm writing leftmost.
So you have another hidden Z2 gauge symmetry. Each of the M's could be changed by plus or minus 1.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that that does very much for us, but it's true. The little b's, they're bilinear in fermion operators. The number operators, of course, those were already bilinear in fermionic things. The remaining issue are the loop products, but you can make them work as well. If you look at a product SPQ, and then you're going on round a loop. So you have the next S is SQ onto another side. And then you substitute in the product. I'm thinking I'd be missing hats off these, but if it's a big S, it's an operator. Now you substitute in the product formula in terms of Majoranas, and this gives us MPQ. Can I just finish this? MQP. This is going to give us MQR, MRQ, and now you pull those two together.
And a minus sign.
There are some minus signs, which, well, there are lots of minus signs, and if the loop's at the right size, I can lose them. We are working in units where minus 1 equals 1. We'll try to honor I. So this becomes my operator B, site Q, other indices P and R, and it would be nice to put an I in there to keep it permission.
When you introduced this at the very beginning, you're changing it in general, your size of your open space.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, a priori, one has a problem with this whole scheme, because you start out with, say, with a finite graph and a finite dimension of open space.
I didn't say the graph was finite.
Well, I said, you said it was arbitrary, so I'll take a graph that's finite, okay. And then you have a finite dimensional open space, which you claimed is equivalent to the one which is obviously infinite dimensional. Now, here you
hold on, see. I've read the Hilbert space bigger.
No, you made it infinite.
No, it's not.
So at some point you're going to make it infinite as well.
I haven't done yet.
So far you've made it incredibly large.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You happen to have a whole, even without G, you know, there's a G separation.
The G is certainly inside the Hilbert space.
Where G goes to infinity, so all those other numbers are out. No, you still have, for every gauge configuration, if you want, you haven't modeled out by gauge transformation.
No.
So you are automatically incredibly large open space.
But it's still finite if the graph is finite.
It's still finite.
I mean, in effect, I just don't
think
more.
And you're going to get to something which isn't, doesn't look at all finite dimensions, which it goes on.
Well, let us be careful. I said they were bosonic in the sense that operators on different sites commute. But their on-site commutation relations, you'll see, are still quite fermionic. And you know that because I just can put everything in terms of my own.
I'd like to ask you a physical question. Suppose I take in a boson Hamiltonian, I take a site and I put 17 bosons on that site. 17. How is it represented in the fermionic description?
No.
On one side.
I've got to be careful.
Physically.
Well, it's not, and I haven't claimed it is, although of course I can add a Bose field to the problem. These are not, I mean, careful. I said they're bosonic in the sense, can I just be very clear about this? I said they're bosonic in the sense that operators acting at different sites commute.
Right.
But we have not yet discussed what the commutation relations are on site, and they are not standard bosonic.
Oh, what are they?
If you let me get them there. Okay. Now, what are the commutations? So, just to wrap up where we've got to, I've got this Hamiltonian. All the bits of it are scattered all over these backboards. So starting with the loop terms, here are the loop operators, and they're bilinear in Majoranas, bilinear in new Majoranas that we introduced. Here are the little b operators, the hopping operators, as it were, and they're bilinear in things fermionic. They involve the one factor of an original fermion and one factor of a Majorana. But again, it's bilinear in things fermionic. We've also got the number operator sitting around. Those are bilinear in fermionic things. And the result of that, then, is if you ask for the commutation relations...
What is... do you have NPP as well?
Do I have?
We don't introduce NPP.
No. The M's are defined in the links.
Yeah.
And do you imagine letting G go to infinity? Or?
Well, I wouldn't like to let it go to infinity, but it can be as big as you like. I'm just suspicious of traps. There's no obvious restriction on
you. Also, so far in your formalism, there's nothing that tells you what the sign of G must be, right? Can mix G to be negative.
Well, I mean, we would like G to be positive.
You would like it to be positive for what you want to do. Okay.
If that makes you happy.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with taking to infinity or projecting out.
Well, okay, but
it's not dynamical in this model anywhere. No. S's are sort of static. So there's a sector with every
projection. Okay. Now, if you allow me to avoid doing a lot of algebra, can you accept that since all these new operators are bilinear in terms of things fermionic, and they are disjointly bilinear in the sense that each of the big B's, little B's, everything, all contain only my operators with the leftmost index of their site. So these products going into the operators living on different sites are completely disjoint. And the result then is that all of these operators at one site commute with all of these operators at another site. That's two minuses make a plus. It's as simple as that. So then the next question, which has been anticipated from the floor, is what are the local commutation relations, and hence how can we represent all of this locally? But before we get buried in that, I really want to emphasize that at a certain level, it's over. I've delivered you that with those commutation relations. And the rest is filling in detail. But so you would like an explicit local representation, and you can have one. Key step is to realize that the only non-commutators are on same site. There are no other non-commutators in the problem. These are the only non-trivial commutation relations we have to implement. But in implementing them, just looking on one site, it's convenient to disentangle everything in terms of the Majorana operators that are living on that site. So suppressing the index of this site, I had one original fermion. The dot represents the index I'm not going to write. And we can write that quite legitimately in terms of a pair of Majoranas, which I'll carry the site index and call them M site 0 plus I M site minus 1. You may not think of using the value minus 1 as an index, but I want to use 1, 2, 3, 4 up to the coordination number for all the Majoranas on the links. So we've also got all the link Majoranas that landed up on this site. They were indexed previously for the site that link connected to. Looking locally, we'd like to re-index them more rationally with an index Q prime, which runs just from 1 up to the coordination number. That should make granular physics people feel happy. Coordination number comes into it. Right, and I will try to be systematic in that Q prime is the local index value that corresponds to connecting sites. Well, I've re-indexed. You see, originally this was the number of some other site you connected to, but locally you don't want to index that way. You'd like to index 1, 2, 3, 4.
Q used to be a neighbor of the dot.
Yeah, yeah.
Coordination number might depend on the site.
It can indeed. I haven't said it doesn't. So you can put an index in the coordination number, right? Okay. Now everything is given in terms of these Majoranas. There are 2 plus Z of these Majorana operators, and we have to implement their anti-commutation relations. Like so, but we only have to do this locally within each site, and so those commutation relations for just a finite number of such operators are easily represented, and this just gives us, these commutation relations give us this standard Euclidean metric Dirac matrices. Okay? Alright, then if you only want 3 of them, then Pauli spin matrices will do. If you want 5 of them, then the standard Dirac equation, Dirac matrices will do. You need to convert it to Euclidean metrics. So in conventional terms, that's gamma naught, I gamma 1, I gamma 2, I gamma 3, and gamma 5, with or without an I, depending on your conventions, gamma 5. So we've got our representation, and it's convenient just to write these as some index, some local index gamma q prime of set psi p. Right, and it's rather redundant to write it again. I can just change those. And I implement those commutation relations, or rather anti-commutation relations, locally on said site. So I've got the commutation relations we need on that site. I can then reassemble everything that was bilinear in the Majoranas bilinearly in terms of these gamma matrices. But we have made a big change, because these gammas acting on different sites commute. So this looks like it just crosses out, changed the symbol job, but it is not. It's much more than that. We've, by taking this step, we've thrown away all the anti-commutation between Majoranas based on different sites. So it's perfectly legitimate to do that, because the operators we want are all bilinear in Majorana. So if you do that, it would be a mistake to run that one off. Then, well, these are a bit trivial, but 2 times the number operator minus 1 on the pth site, that's just going to be I, gamma 0 for the pth site, gamma minus 1 for the pth site, BPQ for the pth site, that's just going to be 1 half gamma 0 of the pth site plus I gamma 1, gamma minus 1 of the pth site times gamma Q for the pth site. And it turns out, once you've done this, these triple indexed big Bs, which are little gamma, are rather ugly, those you can tidy up. It turns out that your leap products can now be expressed in terms of products of operators P, which are indexed in the same way as the S operators. And each of these operators, P, looks superficially and suspiciously, again, like the corresponding S operator. We've got I gamma Q primed of P gamma P primed of Q. Right? So this is a gamma belonging to site P. Q prime is a local index from site P towards site Q.
You just did something I don't understand. When you introduce your Bs over there on the lower right-hand corner,
yes,
way over there, the Ms and the Cs are independent objects, right?
But anti-commutative.
Right. But somehow, now somehow the Cs and Ms are both represented by gamma. Maybe I don't understand.
Well, because I can break up all the Cs into more Majoranas.
Yeah, but why are those Majoranas the same as those Majoranas?
Well, they're not the same, but they're all Majoranas. They all anti-commute with each other.
So they're both represented by the same gammas? I'm confused about that.
Different members of the same set. I should, oh, wait a minute, perhaps this was incautious of me.
Yes.
I should have written.
Are there 2 sets of gammas or only 1 set of gammas?
Well, there's 2 plus z of them. The bottom 2 have come from the original fermion.
Oh, I see.
And the top z have come from the links.
Oh, okay. I didn't understand that.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry.
I thought that was
I should have written,
Z plus Z. Okay.
Yeah, that's, I should have written that down.
Okay.
So, here then is the local representation of the operators here in this Hamiltonian, and they're all simple local matrices, which acting on different sites commute. Right. Now, what's the, is this? This is a convenient point at which I could wrap up with one more panel. And David, is that preferred timing?
Mm-hmm. So, are you going to answer my local question? That if I put 7 bosons on one site, how would they represent it?
Sorry, that's an empty question. If you want to put 7 bosons on the site, by all means, just create some extra operators and make the Hilbert space correspondingly bigger. I don't have any.
If you turn look, nothing in his game depends on the T's not being there. You turn them off. Well, the first step is then trivial, which is why he doesn't want you to allow you to turn them off. There has to be a limit as T's go to 0. There is. He's replacing CP and joint by gamma naught by gamma minus 1. So the kinetic term, the on-site term, is just fermions. that one pass that will be on the other pass. All these angles, you can, those rock matrices can be taken, commuting, like put in the sketch, with other.
Let me put it, let me.
On a given site.
Let me give you a different type answer, mm-hmm. which may help. In as much as these are bosons, they're funny bosons because there's a finite number of them that you can put on a given site. They obey the exclusion principle, but they do not anti-commute at distance.
They obey the exclusion principle.
Yes. But they do not anti-commute.
That's what you mean by that. Given this Hilbert space, I can define operators which would create single particle states.
Oh, yeah.
And they would enter.
They probably would, yeah. But I can write the Hamiltonian down without using them.
Yeah, because you haven't, you can't write down an operator. Both on there.
Well, give me an example of a physical operator that you would wish to be able to write down that you feel can't be written down in terms of. An operator, a term that is allowed to appear in a physical Hamiltonian.
What you mean is by an observable.
Okay.
In a Hilbert space, I can introduce any operator operation, which has a well point action on that, which one of the states in the vector.
Yes, but I don't want to be trapped. Do we agree that something like C dagger is not an observable?
I agree.
Right, okay. So my claim is that.
It doesn't matter, it's an operator.
My claim is that all observables can be written in terms of these things.
Good. Ask the question. Once you write the commutation or anti commutation, or try to write some relations between BPQ and BPQ prime, where Q and Q prime signify different bonds that link to the same site.
Yes.
Those relations, whatever they are, will end up depending on the MPQs and NPQ primes.
Yes, but you see, since we've written these in terms of these, uh-huh. we decompose those into more M's. It suffices to find the commutation relations of the M's.
You can find the commutation relations, right. It's just that they're not.
Well, they're here.
Those are just the commutation relations for the M's.
Yeah.
But if I understand correctly, you're trying to map a bosonic power to a bosonic power.
But I've constructed all the operators out of these. And the only thing outstanding were the original fermions, and that's just me putting as two extra Majoranas. And then I've got all the Majoranas I introduced from the links, which contribute to constructing the B operators and are the whole story on the operators that were big P, the big B that get replaced by B. So there's nothing left.
But the Bs don't commute with each other on the same site.
No, that's right. But the Bs are written in terms of the Ms, and the commutation rules for the Ms I know.
Okay.
Therefore, you can work out the commutation relations for the Bs.
Wasn't it the initial goal to map the fermionic? A very ostensibly fermionic theory to
a bosonic theory. Now, there's a step that I think you've missed. And I said it in words and I didn't write it down. The step was that since each of these is bilinear in fermionic objects, each of these is bilinear in guaranteed distinct fermionic objects, as long as P not equal to Q, then just by the anti-commutation of fermionic objects, any of these will commute with any of these.
Okay, so you just didn't make the claim about these on the same site?
No.
You're enlarging the.
Sure, that's right. No, okay. The on-site commutation relations we have to grind through and find. Right? But it's very easy because you just swing everything into Majoranas and then it's standard.
Well, it'll give you the product of the Majoranas of the bonds. The anti-commutation of the Bs seems to be giving the product of the Majoranas of the bonds.
Yeah.
So just a question of extrapolating your formula here. I mean, the little b's and the big b's, are they raising little bees on any raising and lowering operators for the hen hats as component of any descent on a single site? So is there a...
Not literally, because literally the raising and lowering operators for the hen hats are the original firmament.
Is it...
It is true that I think with some restrictions that the site had to be. Well, with some restrictions on the initial occupation of the site, right? There's some extra factors that you've got to keep up with. But in the sense that you want it, the answer is yes.
So I'm a little confused about something. That the Kitaya model doesn't have any, I'm trying to draw the similarities, but that model doesn't have any obvious, when written in the spin language, doesn't have any obvious global conservation laws, no continuous symmetries. It has sigma x on some bond and sigma y.
Well, I haven't given you any continuous symmetries.
Sorry?
I haven't given you any.
Actually, the product of the sigmas overall.
No, there are lots and lots of conservation laws if I write it cleverly. But if I am naive and look at the spin model, right, it doesn't conserve SZ, SNX, SY, any simple.
Oh, no. It's the,
and what your model has written looks superficially like it conserves boson number defined as sum on P of N hat P.
But P is not P of N.
I don't care. I'm just, is there a conserved U1 charge which has locality in some sense?
Yes, but not. I mean, it's not. You're pursuing a distinction to Kitaya's model that really isn't there.
Well,
it's buried in Kitaya. I mean, let me be clear. The Kitaya Hamiltonian actually corresponds most directly to the Majorana fermion hopping problem.
Yeah.
But then you can solve that and express that in terms of conventional fermions with a half of the one. And it all goes through. I mean, you say it's got no conservation laws, but actually it has hidden in it.
Well, it has fermionic conservation laws.
So you're raising a false question in a way.
So is there any gain to this representation? Is it easier to simulate, for example? Given that there are all those...
Okay. So there's more I don't have time to tell you, but let me just say a few words. We enlarged the Hilbert space. We introduced all these extra operators. You therefore get tempted, once you've got this representation, to go hunting for conservation laws in the new problem. Because after all, the S's were perfectly conserved the way they were introduced, so they were constants of the motion. Then the S's are no longer anything nice and local, but you ought to be able to find a corresponding number of conservation laws. That you can do, but only a minority of them are local to an individual site. You can use those to reduce the dimension of the Hilbert space you need somewhat. But you can't get it, in most cases, you can't get it down to the size of the original Hilbert space. There are some exceptions in Majorana hopping, of which Kitaya's Hamiltonian is an example. Is it useful? Well, that's why I can't persuade PRL to publish it. Came back with the argument that it's neither useful nor interesting. I hope
that it's a criterion for publishing in PRL.
I quote you to the editor? I hoped that it would be of use in condensed matter physics as follows. Normally, if one's dealing with fermions, you start out with a basis that is very much biased to a Fermi liquid. Choose the raw fermions as your elementary excitation. And then, if you resort to numerical techniques, the worry is that, which are of course imperfect, you can only deal with a finite system. The worry then is that your judgments of what the elementary excitations of the system are is rather biased to the basis that you use. So my hope was that in using this sort of basis, I can at least minimize the prejudice in favor of free fermions. It's not obvious this is prejudice in favor of any other set of excitation. So that was my one hope. It's also computationally in some ways nice to be rid of non-commutation relations at distance, but if you take enough care, you can program that in numerically, so it's not obvious that it's a huge change. There was one other agenda that really started all of this, and that was that there was something that I could do about quantum mechanics for systems which were those in this sense, like, that was destroyed by fermionic anti-commutation relations. So I wanted to get rid of fermionic anti-commutation relations, and I thought with a bit of help from Wen and Kerry that I succeeded in doing a good work from that. Okay. There's more I could tell, but I think it's a good place to stop.